Hello and welcome to Ukraine Without Hype. I'm Romy Kratsky, and with me is my colleague Anthony Bartolet. Today we'll be speaking with a very special guest of ours, a friend of the pod. Please welcome Ivan Zharkov.
Greetings, my friends. Nice to meet you.
Ivan, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself?
I'm 33 years old, and after the beginning of the big war on Ukraine, I was defending my country, and now I have the special ability to give you this interview.
Fantastic. We're very happy that you can give us a little bit of your time and your attention for this. We're going to be talking with Ivan about his experiences on the Maidan, about the siege of Kyiv, and finally discussing what exactly is motivating Russia to continue this senseless and bloody violent conflict.
So yeah, the first thing that I want to know about is, I'm aware that you were a protester at Maidan back in 2013, 2014. Can you just give us a rundown of like what you were doing there? Like what? And think of like really your emotions at the time. That's 10 years ago now. That's a whole different world.
Yeah. Thank you for this question. It's very interesting because at this time, 13, 14 years, I was studying at the university for being a medic after I will end it. And I think that kick people, women and other people, it's not good. And I think that I should do something to stop that time government, which give this order to kick people. And there is very many themes of emotions, because that time our country should to decide where we will go, or we will connect with the Russian and we'll work with them on global economy, or we will go at the European Union economy and try to protect our interests. And we write in our constitution that we go into European Union and to the NATO. At this time, our president ran out from our country, and many people from the forces don't want to kick the protesters. And everyone on the Maidan at that year, 13, the end of 13 and beginning of the 14, who was on this Maidan, they know that they coming there to protect our future. They want to free economy. They want to many, many things that people should have in just good countries, where country don't blaming you like a human for being this part of this country. And at that time, the government was very hard for beginners at the business. The small business and the middle business, they haven't big chance for a life. And many of protesters, that was the community of small and middle business. They come out from their homes, come to the Kyiv on Maidan to say our government that they don't want to live in country where they can't make their own business, small business or middle business, because everyone from the government from that time want to get their money from every businessman in that time. Almost they got all power to do and close up different businesses. They don't even need to write something or educate. They just come out and close up the business and stealing all money, stealing all equipment from the businessmen, beginners from small and middle business. And people don't want to live in those countries where they can't make the money. They know that money is in this country, but they can't do something because on the next day, to them, coming someone in the uniform and say, man, you need to give me money if you want to make the business. Many people come out from this home and say no to this system. And you saw that people was ready to dying versus even a case when the police shoot them with the automatical weapon, they go in on them. Because we protecting the base of all humanity, I don't know how to say it right, ценность. When you protecting something very important for you, and this kind of important thing is important for everyone from your community around you. And when you start to protect this thing, everyone around you starting to help you protect this thing. It's
like self-defense, but like for a community, not for the person.
Yes. It's a very, very strange but unique mechanism in our country, in our community. People don't understand why they do this. They only do this because they know they should. They don't know why, but they doing this. It's very, very interesting mechanism, but I'm not sure that I should talk about this. And I will return to Maiden. There was many hard decisions which I take there. The first was that I should to end my education and don't leave it and go at war, because I have the should take the right decision about it. At that time, I'm almost the end of the university, but I got the war at my country, and I understand that I should do something, and I can't stand and sit at one place. I understand that I should go, and if I need, I should die for this country. And I was ready for it. Yeah, I was ready for it. After the Maiden, I know.
Yeah, the word that a lot of people use is to have a normal country. People were willing to die to have a normal country, not one that's, you know, abused all the time by, yeah, like the mafia and that kind of thing. So
others, people will say to you how you should live. If you don't live like they want, they will kick you and kill you. I don't want to live in those countries. I think that it's normal to all people do not live in those countries. You're afraid to leave.
Yeah. So looking back at Maidan, did you see like how bad Russia's reaction would be afterwards? Like, or did that come as a surprise?
No. I think about the war with Russia before they start it. Was in Crimea when they steal and say, it's not me, it's not mine, and it's not we, it's, I don't know who is it, it's green man people.
Yeah, the little green men.
Yeah, it's just some kind of people in green uniform, we don't know.
Local patriots.
Yes, local patriots. And I know that everyone who got the brain, they know that it's Russian forces, it's Russian army, and it's occupation. They was with no signs of notification who they or something like this. They just steal our territory. We trying at this time, Ukrainian government, which was very, very weak at this moment, because
the transitional government.
Yes, transitional government. They trying to protect our citizens in Crimea and other regions. And they was very good decisions about do not use the forces to stop the Russians. Military potentials at that times, even if we will say that Ukraine is most powerful country in the world, even there we couldn't stay and couldn't stop them if they attack us at 13 and 14 years. I were happy that they just tried to get the Donbas and Lugansk at this time. For brain weak peoples, which believe to Russian that if they will come here and put their power here, I told about the forces, the others, people like citizens, grandmas, granddads, old people will get something from this. No, Russians don't need that. They need the territory to put on this territory their forces. And our work now, it's don't let them to put these forces here. But they got many forces, many. And we should destroy them.
And the 10 years have passed, mm-hmm. which is, you know, a really long time now that I say it. You were, you know, living your life, Ukrainian guy doing stuff. But then when the full-scale Russian invasion comes, but then the Russian military buildup begins, you know, in the previous summer, fall. And since you were, you know, very much aware of Russian intention, you know, way back 2014, 2015, were you, I guess, on the more nervous side? Because some Ukrainians are like, oh, it's not going to happen. Some Ukrainians are like, oh, start panicking now. Like, where were you on that?
Well, the beginning, it was 24th February. At the 22th February, I was sick. I got sick and got very high temperature. It was about 40 degrees. And at the 23 February, I go to my doctor and say, I want to give you the analysis about COVID. I'm afraid of it. I was very sick. And when the war begins, I was sick at home with the temperature 40. And my mother come here to me at my home and come, boom, 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 knock, knock, knock. Come on, the war is beginning. And I'm staying, it's what, seven early morning. And I don't know why she come here so early. And I ask her, Mom, what happened? Why are you so early? I'm get sick. I get the temperature 30. She said, the war is beginning. The Russia invaded. I told her, Mom, it's not 214 years. It was many years ago. I told you that we got the war with Russia many years ago. And she said, no, it's global war with Russia. And I okay, okay, go to Poland. go to Poland. And I've got very big temperature until the end of February this year. After this, I've got about 1 week to get some powers to do something, because the temperature slowly falling down. And after I have the good temperature, I go to the military army and say that I want to fight to protect my city. The Russians was about 5 kilometers up to me. And I say, I just want to have weapon to die or win or something, do something. And they say, okay, and send me to the tanks. So that was the funniest, the beginning of my army life. The man who never was at army. No experience, no nothing, only medical education, and my faith and my belief that we will win, and trying to do my best, do something to help. I believed that this war fake, the Russians should think about it. They shouldn't die like non-human here. And they will fall back. But no, I was mistaken about it. And I understand that I should do my best to stay in life and save as more lives as I can where I was, in the tanks, in the infantry. So that was my path through my mind and mindless and my thinks about different species of lives at that time.
So you were present during the siege of Kiev, right?
Yeah.
What was the kind of mood like for the defenders? If you looked at the Western news, they were all saying, you know, Kiev is going to fall in 2 days. Ukrainians can't possibly hope to defend against mm-hmm. the second largest army in the world, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, none of that happened. But Was that something that people, specifically like the defenders, is this something you guys were thinking about, or were you focused completely on victory?
We focused completely on victory. On that time when the Russian forces believe in themselves and start this war, they use everything they get and they try to get to Kyiv. It doesn't mean that they don't try. They try many, many hard times to get into Kyiv and destroy our government and
they other spent places. Like two-thirds of their Vedev force.
Yeah, I believed in our victory. I don't think that we have any chance to lose this war. I believe in our forces. I believe in our army anyway. And I take my own decision. If everything would be bad, so bad, I will go and die like a man and go into Valhalla. I'm dying protecting my home. Neither I will live in this country with no Ukrainian, with no freedom. And I take this decision and I was ready to die for it. And I do everything to get the weapon at this time when the siege of Kyiv was, when I come to my Tetsaka,
where Tetsaka is a recruitment center.
Yeah, recruitment center near that center. About 100 or 200 meters, there was red rocket strikes and some kind of soundtrack to my talk to the recruitment. And he asked me, why you want to stand and fight with the gun? And I say, I don't know. And I'm
just stare and look at him. No idea.
Why I want to come to army? I have no idea. And he said, we don't get the meat at our forces. We don't need the meat. We don't need the people which go and die. And I say, no, I'm not going to die. I'm going to kill. Give me the weapon. I know you got the weapons from other country. I read this in the news. You got these weapons. Give me one. I know this place like a man. And I told them about different places near the Kyiv for protecting the Kyiv. And they was very excited. And they say, okay, we will call you. For the next day, they don't call me, and I call them and asking them, okay, I still don't have the gun for my protection. There's 3-5 kilometers, there's Russians there. I don't have something other from the axe and knife to kill them. I don't want to... But when they come to me for this weapon, I want to...
Bring a knife to a gunfight is generally considered ill-advised.
Yes, it's a very, very bad sight when you come in for shooting with the gun. And there was many, many people which in this time running out from the Kyiv. It's true, from other places, from other hidden roads, small roads. At this time, I said to my mama, take my girlfriend, take everything, go to Poland, be more careful. I will stay here and protect the home. She listened to me and ran out with my kind of family, with brother, his wife, and others. They run out from the Kyiv, I stayed and preparing for to meet the Russians. I've got many cold steel and weapons, knives, axes and others, but it was not interesting for me. And I go to the Ukrainian forces and
I hope our listeners know what the ZSU, is. It is the Ukrainian abbreviation for the Armed Forces of Ukraine.
Yes. Sorry for listeners about my English. I don't use it every day.
And trust me, it's completely fine.
I'm not a native speaker, so if I get more time to practice, that would be better, maybe. So, returning to my story. After we stopped the Russian invading near the Kyiv, there was a couple of weeks, the window, where we have many different helps from our partners, different collaborates from other countries with the different kinds of help for Ukraine. It's energetic, it's a weaponry, other political investments and others. The world starts to trying to help us to win this war, not only on the battlefield, but and in another spheres of our life. At that time, when it begins, everyone who left in Kyiv, who staying at home, they was ready to die for their own homes, meeting the Russians and kill as much as they can. Everyone who I know, they don't run, they try to protect, try to help our defenders, or trying to do their best on the places where they was. I've got the friend which making the food, field cook for many defenders of the Kyiv, more than 2,500 people every day, about a couple of months. He just want to help, but his health not the best, so he can't go into forces, but he want to be useful, so help and trying to do his best. Other friends just paying the money for forces or something like this, and everyone trying to stop.
Yeah, it's a bit shocking to think about now, but during the initial phase of the invasion, people were bribing their way into the army instead of out of it.
Now they trying to get out from it, but it's 2 years. I can understand these guys because I was 1 year and a half in this war. From this year and a half, I was almost 14 months at the war. So it's in a location where you can die every second, every single second. Not from the bullet, but from the artillery, like a minimum. So I stay alive and I'm happy, but I will return soon there, I think, to help our guys, new guys. Maybe I will try to coordinate and teach them.
So the Battle of Kyiv, you win it. The Russians are driven away. The area around Kyiv was liberated. More people came back to the city because it was considered safe. What did you do next? Because you're in the army. You go through this period after the winning the siege of Kyiv. Where do you go next after Kyiv?
After the next, I go to the Kharkivska Oblast. And there we fighting couple of months with Russians face to face. So they winning, we winning, they winning, we winning. Until the big operation where we liberated the Kharkivska Oblast and other places. And that was a huge, huge, difficult cooperation from all our force. We're running after the Russians. They throw back their artillery. They throw back about 300 tanks, only tanks. Our tanks was worse than they throw. We get their tanks because they are better that we have it. And they throw it back, and it was working.
It had the key in the ignition.
Yeah, he is working now. Dun, 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 dun. So you just seen it and go, and we work. And that was a kind of interesting operation. And after that, we got the stable front line now until from the Kharkivska operation. There is almost no massive changes. Yeah, you're right.
As you were telling us beforehand, like before this interview, during this battle of the Kharkiv region is when you began to have leadership positions. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us about how that worked? Because one thing that's interesting about the Ukrainian military is that it's not always about rank. It's about like respect. So how did you find yourself in leadership position?
Yes, maybe. So, and I was on the position of soldier because I don't have the military courses before and don't have any military skills or something. So army said that I will be just a soldier. After one month and maybe a couple of weeks after I start my professional warrior path, we write to the zone of accountability and starting to do our function. I was at the medical division or something like this. A couple of doctors with me, a couple of nurses, and a couple of soldiers with no medical education for our defending. It's like a small mobile medical group. And we starting to do our functions on the place. We try to find out who from the soldiers don't have enough health to make the continue fighting, to make their own functions and others. We got about three or four weeks to do the local medical review of all fighters from our. There was many people with bad health which come there because they want to be useful. And but they don't have enough health to do, and we fired out them by a medical
discharge.
Well, that's one of the downsides of the Ukrainian military. In most militaries, your average soldier is, you know, a spry young 18-year-old in good shape. Whereas in Ukraine, it tends to be older, and you know, getting into my 30s, the cracks begin to open up a bit. So I could see why there's some issues with pre-existing conditions in the Ukrainian military.
Kind of reminds me of when the U.S. military during World War I began a conscription drive. When the U.S. military in World War I began a conscription drive, about one third of conscripts were judged medically unfit and suffering from malnutrition.
When we start this global war, there was many grandpas in the in the military. There was many people from the 45 age and higher until even 62. They can't be in the military after the 60. So we ask them, why? Why are you coming here? Grandpa, go home and leave. And they just say that why should young people die if I can almost do the same? And I've got the children, my family, and other. They don't have anything to lose. They live their own life. They live their own life, and they was ready to die for it. Even people returning from other countries to protect Ukraine. In my military force group, there was many people, which come back from Italy and from Poland and other countries where they lived more than 15 or 20 years. They got everything there, the business, the cars, the homes, everything they need for a living. And they just come here and sit into the tank and going to fight into the battle because they know that Ukraine is inside. They feel it. They know that these words, it's not just the word, the name of the country. For everyone, it's more bigger. It's something personal. That's why everyone, almost everyone in our country, when it begins, trying to find out their own place in this world. They trying to be useful, trying to do something, just trying to be the humans. And after the months and couple, when we starting to do our job, my commander of medical forces назначил, designated me for a position, officer position, because before it, I organized the medical punct of...
Ah, so you like set up field hospitals.
Yes, I've got the one equipage. One equipage is one car, medical car, one driver, and one medical nurse, and one soldier. I got three people in my crew. Yeah, firstly, with this crew, we work about a couple of weeks, 3 weeks. First, it's beginning of the April. We collecting our people from the hospitals after the when they get sick, we collecting them and took them and bring back to the first organization. Yeah, and after the good start and beginning, when I organized with no medicine, with nothing, only with my crew organized on the place.
How do you treat wounded soldiers if you don't have medical supplies?
I'm asking my friends, my volunteers, that we need something to heal up. There was a very cold winter that year and a very cold spring. And we need many, many medicine for people who get cold and got temperature, hypothermia, yes. And we collecting it from the places, on the places, and my equipage doing well because I told them what they should do, and I organized every this. I organized, and they only just do what I say.
So, did the military not provide medical supplies? Like, was the military not equipped? Because a lot of this stuff you have to source from volunteers. And one of my questions is, why shouldn't the military have all of this stuff?
Because the need of people are more than our military can provide. There was medical supply from our force, but there was some kind of funny stuff. There was weird positions about medicine, weird different positions, which we don't need at those time. But they want that I... should take them and put my autography on it that I taken
and signature,
yeah, signature that I take it, and it's my own responsibility about this what I take, and every single position from what I take from them I should write where did I
what you did with it.
Yes.
So you didn't have enough of what you needed, yeah. But they gave you a lot of what you didn't need.
They want that I get what I don't need. Yeah, because they should give our medical positions something from medicine. But what kind they do, we don't need this nothing from that at that time. And we saying that we don't need it. We need those, and those. And they say, go get it, something else.
To say that this sounds very typical of the post-Soviet bureaucracy system. So I guess that raises the next question of, now that you're in a position of, you know, being able to organize things, lead people, and this is an obvious example of running up against the old system. How much of a problem is that in the army in general, of just the old way of doing things?
It's a big problem, because it's not even Echo. It's more bigger than Echo from the Soviet Union. It's something like a ghost with the body from the Soviet Union.
But what people, what I've heard from people is, especially people who have not wanted to enlist, is they very commonly will say, well, I don't want to die in the Red Army.
Of course
they considering that Russia is invading us, is ironic on way too many levels. Presumably, if our military was a little more modern, they would be less hesitant.
We don't have the time to modern our army. We got 33 years to modern our army, guys. And if we don't do this yet, maybe even at the war, we will not do this. We will not modern it. Even we got the war. Yeah, we can moderate it, make it better, or some kind do the experiments to do better. But anyway, the basics are from this, from our older army. So it's like paper army. You've got, you need the paper. If you don't need the paper, you are not a human in army.
So you're fighting on the Kharkiv front, you're in this medical position, but you've also been like in the tank units and infantry. So kind of wrap up this section. Like, what else have you done in the army after this medical? And I don't know, any good stories?
Good stories? No.
What I don't think there's a lot of good stories in war, Anthony.
War stories.
Might be war stories, but they ain't good.
Well, there was many, many heartbreaking stories from Bakhmut where I was there. I was there when the Wagners was still alive, like the subjects, I mean, like the force power. We fight in about a month at the Bakhmut after we got no ability to do our job. Then we was fall back from the Bakhmut. We hold the defense there even before they attack the Chasny sector.
The residential area.
Residential area near the Bakhmut. And there was very hard. We trying to get the positions, the longest positions, sent there five our guys, said, hey, guys, you should take these positions. And the last one, what I heard from him, that was the shotgunning and running bloody out voice, which saying that he is 300.
300 is an old Soviet military designation, which means wounded.
We can't get him out, and the four other guys from this group. On the next day, there was, I remember this. In the morning, you walking out from the ground, underground, and you have a couple of minutes to smoke or drink something. Okay. I smoke the cigarettes, and I hear that at this day, there is Azov coming in Bakhmut. So I think, oh, nice, Azov, I know them, they hard fighters. It was 8 or 7 early morning, so nice. This day, the evening, I was asking the people with which I worked, how many the 300s, they say, from the 500 people from this Azov, there was 170 people, 320 people, 200 dead, 20 people dead, and almost 200 people.
It's nearly a 40% casualty rate.
And at the morning they coming in the Bakhmut, in the evening they from the Bakhmut going out because they can't continue their fighting. When they all fighters are fallen down. So that was one day in Bakhmut. I was there the months, and almost every day there was hard fighting from everywhere, from every single weapon, many air bombs on the city, many hard artillery from the 200 millimeters. That was very, very hard. So when I was there, I was on position начальник медицинского пункта.
The head of the medical station.
Yes. I was standing on this position about a year in the tank forces with like a soldier, but it's the position for the officers. So my commander to put me on this position, he write the отдельный приказ.
A separate order
to make me for this position. And only after this, I stand like the officer and fights like the officer position. But I still don't have the officer position in the life. But at the war, you can be whoever you can be. So it means if you coming and you don't have any skills, it's gem. You are the gem for the army. You're ideal soldier if you can't do anything. Nothing. I can do nothing. So the army will make you the ideal soldier. They will teach you everything they need for this position where they want to put you. They will do everything. It's good. They will give you everything you need, but they will put you on the position. Want you or don't, it's not the matter.
In the United States, in the Marines, there's the phrase, the needs of the Corps. You'll be assigned to whatever you're needed. So that does make sense. But like I said earlier, that's much easier to do with 18-year-olds.
It's more harder when you're trying to explain this for a 55 years man, and he stands and watch on you at the battle, and he don't understand why you talking to him and do talk to him and tell him what to do, and after he asking who I am, he do what I said him, because he don't know who I am, where he is, what he should do. And other things. It's very, very difficult to explain, but there is many factors in our army, which very important. Even the position where people do not fighting against Russian face-to-face, they should do many work for people which going to fight face-to-face with the Russians, to our штурмовые батальоны.
Assault battalions,
yes. There, it's like the big mechanism which should work like the one to make the endless goals make true. And there is people from 18 years until 60, 62, they just want to fight and do something, and they coming and saying, I can fix the cars, and they go in fixing cars. Another man coming, he get 54 years old, he said that I was 35 years driver, and no one will send him with the weapon in the tank, he will be the driver on the car. And many people which come in and they saying, I don't have the skills, I don't know what to do. They go into the kitchen, they helping everywhere, where everywhere need the human. It's big mechanism which we building up now. I'm saying, because these two wars, it's like a something where people forging and making better, even if they don't do something before, they will try to do it in the force, because they want to be useful.
The army, the place that matter forged.
If we have that in the commercial. So I guess now you're in Kyiv, of course, with us here. So I guess the question then is, so you're not currently at the front. Are you getting ready to do anything now that you're allowed to tell us anyway?
I'm doing. I am studying and trying to get the officer. I will be the officer. After that, I will try to find out where I can cooperate with the medical suspects, different people, and will try to do my own course for people which go in there, but
like basic first aid training.
Yes, like the basic training and like psychology for them, because people don't know what to expect there. They afraid of their own afraid. Afraid. It's very interesting mechanism. Very. And I'm trying to be useful now.
Let's move on from kind of the direct experience of war to the question that I'm sure has been bothering not just me, but many, many people. And that question is, it's been 2 years. The Russians have like thrown their own citizens at us like meat. What are they fighting? Like, why are they doing this? What motivates them to continuously die in these pointless assaults to win a kilometer of a village that no one's ever heard of and no one will visit again?
On my own opinion, I think they got every single Russian got their own motivation. For someone, it's money, because they got money problems in their country. And the choice that they have, it's going to jail or going to try make money on the war and returning into normal life where they have enough money, have no problems with the credits or something like that. It's one of them. Another, it's people only for money. It's from other countries, from everywhere. They only fighting. It's just the work for them. The third one is Russian army. They got the precise order. They got the order. So they will make this order come true, even if this order to kill their own family. So the order is the order, they think. They don't have no stop lines about that the order can be wrong. Yes, that's the motivation of them. They think that Ukrainian belongs to them, that the Ukrainian don't exist or something like that, because their own political system will broke up with no Ukraine in their collaborating economy, because they think that we are brothers. Ukrainian is our younger brother.
I mean, that was all easier to believe when they weren't bombing, invading, and killing us.
Yes.
When you bomb, invade, and kill people, they are typically less disposed to view you favorably.
It's the most, I think, it's the most and biggest thing that they can show us is bomb us and say, that's how we love you. We love you so much, like this explosion.
Well, the phrase in Russian for relationship advice is, you know, if he loves you, he'll hit you.
Yes. So they very love us, very, very love. If they don't love us, why do they die so many here? If they don't love us so much, they don't want to tell us the truth, the really truth. They want to come to us with the gun and say how is the Putin is good or how is the Russia is amazing country. So they want that we lived worse than them. And the forces now in the Kharkivsk Oblast, I talk to citizens, they say they don't believe that we got the gas in the village.
Have you ever treated any Russian prisoners of war?
I saw them. They was with the tourniquets or something like that. Okay. But those tourniquets was like 24 hours or more. So those Russians were left with no hands. And what the Wagner near the Chasiv Yar a couple months ago, about a half year when I was there. So I saw them. It's non-intelligent people. They don't
think. I mean, they can't really be that intelligent if they're willing to die for, like, $1,500 a month?
Well, I'll plug this in now because I recently put out a video on our Patreon to anyone who gives us money where I talked about some of the kit I bring into the field. And one thing I commented was on tourniquets. I was afraid that people were overusing tourniquets because if they're on too long or if you put too many on, like, you can self-amputate. And I was saying that as more of a theoretical concern, but I guess, yeah, if the Russians are having tourniquets on for 24 hours, that means they received zero training whatsoever.
And that's one of the biggest, I think, kind of differences that have really been highlighted by the war. Just the fact that we don't, we consider our soldiers to be human, and the Russian military does not consider its soldiers to be human. Like, in Ukraine, we're very fond of calling Russians orcs and animals because they don't seem to act like people who have agency and rich inner lives, like souls, in other words. They just shuffle zombie-like, fulfilling whatever order they've been giving, regardless of the reason. There was a report recently about a Russian unit stationed somewhere on the front, and the commanders of that unit, so the unit is like half composed of regular conscripts and half composed of prison slave soldiers, basically prisoners. Their commanders are like 10 or 15 kilometers behind the front lines where all the soldiers are, just hiding in a bunker. And the report was about the, like, just horrible, horrific hazing, constant rape, constant beatings, the criminality. And again, what struck me was not that they were doing all of this. It was that their commanders are not there. Literally, there is nothing stopping them from taking their guns and, like, going anywhere else. They can easily do that. There's no commander. There are no officers there. They can shoot whoever says, let's not run away, and then run away, you know, wherever. But they don't do that. They continue these, like, just debased, depraved little rape camps and kill us. It's really hard to picture a functioning human being who has a, you know, an internal narration and is just like you and me, who accepts living in these conditions when you have a firearm in your hand and you can change your life radically like that.
Yeah, yeah. The gun is the power.
But they don't use this power. They just die.
They try. Like,
it's one of my biggest questions is why aren't the Russians shooting their own soldiers or their own officers? Like, they should be shooting their officers everywhere because these officers are A, hiding far behind the front lines, and B, they send them in meat waves.
They shooting their own officers with the artillery.
Well, clearly not enough.
Or, yeah, not enough, because they still got them. But they use this tactic to motivate their forces go forward.
Who is motivated by this? Who in the world is motivated by this?
Okay. I will try to explain you their logic, what I understand, how it works, on my opinion. They don't have the chance to live. They have only one choice. You go with the weapon that way and trying to kill Ukrainians, or I will shoot you here.
But you can shoot him back.
No.
Why not?
They're afraid of.
What is there to be? This is my biggest problem. So I'm a short, fat, brown nerd, and I grew up in a very racist country, America. I have been subjected to a whole litany of the injustices And when I'm subjected to these injustices, my reaction typically is to, like, attack whoever is oppressing me. I have retaliated physically, I've retaliated verbally, I've retaliated legally. But I retaliate. I don't just sit and take it when someone makes, like, tries to fuck me. And it's just impossible for me to understand how someone with a gun is too scared to shoot the asshole that's telling him to die.
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know how it's say right, but they don't have where to run. They don't have the choice. Even if they will shoot this commander, which trying to send them for the death, there will come another one, or will not come, and they will shoot their own artillery. These people who don't go forward. They killing their own soldiers. They killing their own officers. You think there is no people which have some kind of minds about this nonsense war? Of course they have. But what do you think with them happens when the Russian soldier asking his officer or local commander, why I should go there and die for nothing?
The answer is, like, obvious, because I told you so.
Yes, the answer is go forward or I kill you, suka blyat.
Okay, but if you go forward, you also die. It's just, I don't know, it doesn't make any sense.
He got the chance to...
You have a chance to survive if you shoot your officer and go into the woods. That's actually a much bigger chance.
But
you have a gun, you have a car usually, and you are in the woods.
Yeah, but you kill the first commander and run out 10 kilometers. Or how much will you on your knees? No,
presumably you can show other people that, like, you can also kill your own commanders.
Yes, but you can't kill everyone until you will return to the Russia.
I disagree. So. I think you could, and I think they should. I think they're cowards for not doing it.
That was,
like, if it's easier
part.
For you
yes.
to walk forward and die, then you're a coward. Like, it should be easier to shoot the enemy or to shoot the asshole that is telling you to die. I don't know. To me, it has always been easier to escalate than de-escalate. Maybe I'm just an aggressive person.
No, you got the normal reaction. It's a normal human reaction. When someone tell you to go forward and die for nothing. You
like, no, fuck off.
Yes, fuck off. Why should
I have a gun just like you have a gun?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Put me in jail? Like, I have a gun. I will kill you can try, but I'm going to kill a lot of you. We have mass shootings in America every day. Mass shooters can kill a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah.
One person with a firearm can kill a lot of other human beings.
Yes, if he got these ideas, he will. But I don't think that it's good. But anyway, the Russians don't want to stop. And we will stop them. That would be hard, but we will do this.
Because that's our last question, I think, is since you are back in Kyiv, you're living as normal of a life as you can in Ukraine, all things considered. Kyiv is, you know, normal. It's not Kherson, it's not even Kharkiv or anything like that. So being away from the front and dealing more with quote unquote normal life, have you had time to reflect on, like, your position as a soldier in Ukraine, on the place of soldiers in Ukraine, how the government treats soldiers? Do you have any reflections on that?
I think
that you can tell us without getting in trouble with the army.
No, I don't think that my army will give me some kind of problems because I don't say something bad for my own army. No, if I understand you right, maybe I should do more than I do now. I feel so. Because I'm trying to find out myself. I don't know how it's a right. I'm trying to be myself before the war. My mind health trying to return into normal life, trying to help my previous forces. Time from time, I call them and ask what do they need. And if they need something, I send it to them. And I going to be the officer and starting to learn people, the first maid help for this unacceptable situation. If something happens, they should know how to act in these situations, different situations. And there is many work forward at this war. The war is not going to end tomorrow or day after tomorrow. No, it's going to be 1 year, I think a minimum 1 year. I think more, 2 or 2.5 years. Maybe, I hope I don't write this and the war will end as soon as possible. But it can end only on our terms, yes, only on our terms, because we are right. We are not fighting for something which don't belong to us. We only want to bring our territory back and that this Russian fuck off from us. And we are talking to them with these words, just guys, fuck off from us. But they don't want. They think that we are them. Or they are we. They can't understand why Ukrainians don't want to suck the Putin's biba.
Well, gee, why don't I want to live under a regime that will order me to walk forward until I die to Ukrainian artillery?
Yeah. Why
wouldn't anyone want to live in a society where it's completely normal to be just made to walk and die, and if you try to resist at all, they'll kill you anyway? That's a normal, happy, functioning, prosperous country and culture.
Yes, almost all people which live there, they saying, what can I do? This, I'm not in the government. It's political, global political. What can I do? Like a Russian citizen.
Yeah, I just want to point out that at the turn of the 20th century, Russian soldiers did, in fact, decide that they didn't want to walk forward and die.
They want, and they trying to do this better and better every day. And our forces, they helping with this. But we're losing our people every day. Even how funny that was about stupidity of Russian military. But they are not stupid. They are not orcs. They good forces. They got good forces. We fighting with them. They got better equipment than we got because they work on it before. And our government say, what? And this spring we are going to eat meat or something, shashliki. There will be no war tomorrow. Remember what Zelensky said, what our government said. Не буде ніякої війни. There will be no war. No. And only because we got good officers, like good commanders, like Zaluzhny. Really, it's soldier from 1 million. When the man on his place... not only in the force, when in different spheres, if the man do his job right, you will see it on the table really, really fast. And he don't listen to president and starts to defend Ukraine and Kyiv and starts to make the force buildings and prepare Kyiv for siege. So. There is many people which trying to help, and there is many people which trying to destroy Ukrainian like country. They don't want that Ukrainian exist, because the existing of Ukrainian, it's the death of the Russia. They will die with no Ukrainian.
Inshallah. Yeah, I think that's as good of a line to end up as any. So thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
If there's any, you know, funds we can direct our listeners to, we'll put that in the description and all that. I will do the outro separately so it's not an awkward conversation. So until next episode, Slava Ukraini.
Heroim Slava.
If you would like to learn more about Ukraine, get some links to reliable charities you can give to for both humanitarian and military purposes, please go to the link in the description. There's a link tree there with a list of resources. If you would like to support Ukraine more broadly, I would also suggest that you call your congresspeople and especially in the House of Representatives, ask them to sign the discharge petition to put the Ukraine aid bill to a vote. If you'd like to support Ukraine Without Hype, please tell your friends about us, like us, share us on social media, get the word out. If you'd like to support us financially, you can go to patreon.com/UkraineWithoutHype. And now I'd like to thank our wonderful patrons. So thank you very much to Deborah Grazer, Randy McNerlin, Voices in My Head are from Big Pharma, David Shepard, Giorgio, Ivana Kokoratskaya, Michael Druker, Anna Karen Person, Anonymous, Dennis Napalm, Debbie, Dimitri Litvin, Etienne, James Burke, Jan, Janara, Benny Louise, Kevin Alberton, Marguerite, Michael Wickman, Mike Perrone, PLM, Shieldwall, Silas Frank, T. Bart, Vivek, Adam Poppenheimer, Aiden McDonald, Alex Strochmal, Anastasia, Barbara, Captain Technical, Chris Bennington, Daniel Spring, David Wall, Emily Bavona, Francois, Grace Krauss, Add to Laugh, Jacob Holm, James Wise, Jared Brad, Bradley, Jerd, Julia Lindsay, Laura DeLeon, Livy Grove, Marianne, Matt Miller, Melissa Koselko, Anonymous, Noam Hart, Paul Bailey, RDK, Sanjay, Scott Berry, Scott Gengris, Scott Tokaryuk, Stuart Akers, Subtle Knife, Thomas Sobiek, Veronica, Victoria Leontineva, and Wandering Lens. Thank you all so much to make this podcast possible. So until next week, Slava Ukraini!